This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. It can be used to make food, fuel, clothing, insulation, plastics, paper, building materials, and more. It's grown for just such purposes in many places around the world, and it used to be perfectly legal to do that here. Indeed, there was a time when Virginia farmers were under contract with the U.S. Navy to grow it. So how come industrial hemp is illegal now? And why do some lawmakers roll their eyes when advocates for re-legalization make their pitch? If in your head the word marijuana just sprang to mind, those pushing to once again produce hemp in Virginia would really like to talk with you. They say their campaign has nothing to do with drugs, but does portend significant economic benefits for our Commonwealth. Your chance to consider their case in detail is coming up right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. We're talking about a different type of green today, actually all about a specific type of plant that certainly itself is green in color, but that advocates say is green because of all the environmentally friendly ways it can be used, and green, too, in terms of cash. A crop these advocates say could mean a big economic benefit to Virginia. And if at any point in today's conversation you find you have a question or a comment of your own to offer, 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our call-in phone number. A bit later in the hour, we're going to be hearing from a state lawmaker as well as from a plant physiologist who will give us their takes on today's topic. But we start with a former longtime member of the Montgomery County, Virginia Board of Supervisors, as well as current activist in the push to legalize industrial hemp, Jim Politis. Welcome to the Insight Studios.
Thank you very much for the introduction. It's a great pleasure to be here in Harrisonburg. I'm, as he said, down in Montgomery County, far southwest Virginia, the home of Virginia Tech. And it's really an honor to be up in this part of the state and in the Shenandoah Valley.
Well, also with us, the founder of the Virginia Industrial Hemp Coalition, who hails from Nelson County, Virginia, Jason Amatucci. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate you putting a spotlight on hemp for us this hour, and I'm really glad to be here.
Well, at any moment now, someone listening is going to call us at 888-967-2825 and share their opinion on this topic. But while we're waiting, Jim Politis, let's go to you first. What do people need to know about hemp that you suspect they might not?
The economic value of the product. Industrial hemp is a product that can create over 25,000 different products by itself, from oils for biofuel, oils for lotions and soaps, stalk, which is your stems for fiber, and herd products, which is good for building materials. There are just so many different ways you can use it, and it would be a great tool for small entrepreneurial enterprises if we can get this legalized and allow regulations in the proper manner for people to utilize it.
And jobs, you know, everybody's talking about jobs, economy. You know, this is another tool in the toolbox for farmers. It's a great rotational crop for corn, and we, all these facts that we have here. I mean, the evidence is just amazing of this plant and how much more beneficial it is than other competing things. Just for instance, cotton. Let's take the cotton industry.
Mm-hmm.
50% of the world's pesticides are used in cotton. Now, hemp can replace cotton for a lot of things, and we don't even have to put any pesticides on it. It is a natural, you know, it just keeps pests away naturally in a lot of ways. We don't even have to have much fertilizer for it.
And the other thing is that it takes about half the amount of water,
yeah.
So you don't have to worry as much about irrigation.
Right.
And in 2011, China was growing about 50,000 acres of hemp. And they're a very large textile country. As most people know, we get most of our clothing from there. Well, due to the population of China and the lack of food available, they use cotton on their most fertile soils. So they're going to increase their level of industrial hemp to 1 million acres so they, in poorer soils, so they can free up the good valuable soils to grow food for their people. And this is something that, you know, was stated 2 years ago, and I'm sure they're progressing from there.
And you say, why hemp? I mean, I think the shorter question is, why not hemp? I mean, because there's really no good reason. I'd like to have somebody call in and let me know why, you know, industrial hemp with 0.3% THC or less should not be growing, and we should not be utilizing this plant that's been growing for, you know, dates back 8,000 BC, 10,000 BC. It's one of the first, you know, plants that we had a relationship with. In China, they had it in graves and things. I mean, for us to just have a law that says we cannot grow this, I just think is just irresponsible, number one, for people to ignore it. And again, lawmakers, it's irresponsible for them. And, you know, there isn't a really good argument, I mean, for this. Like I said, I would like to have someone call in and with facts. Give me an argument with facts that really back that up. But
Jason Amatucci, you just mentioned THC. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, the difference of industrial hemp. This is something that a lot of people don't realize, maybe, is that there is an international standard for industrial hemp, and it's 0.3 THC. That is minuscule. That is a psychoactive in marijuana and in this plant. And what it does is this, you know, quote unquote, gets people high. Marijuana has between 5, 10%, up to 20%, sometimes 25% in bud producing, like marijuana cannabis. It's a different plant. It's like a sister plant. It's a cousin. It grows entirely different. You cannot grow this in a field of industrial hemp. It does not work. It cross pollinates. It grows differently. So that's something we have to educate people on, because when they hear hemp, industrial hemp, you know, all of a sudden they just think it's all the same thing. We're a one issue organization, and we're trying to get industrial hemp growing in the fields. All these countries around the nation, we're the only industrialized nation in the world that does not grow industrialized hemp. So basically all these other nations have done this successfully, and there's not been any problem with law enforcement. And they have laws again, you know, with drug laws, and there's not been any problem. So the history's there. It doesn't create an issue. It doesn't create a problem. And then, like I said, this gives another tool for the farmers who are getting hit hard in the economy. You know, tobacco's gone down in Virginia. This state was the first state to grow in the 17th century. You know, we have a history. The first hemp seeds were sown in Virginia.
1619.
And there was a law, actually, on the books in the colonial days that said you had to grow hemp by law. You know, so we went a totally about face. We have a law you had to grow it. Now there's a law you cannot grow it. So
one of the reasons hemp was so important back in those days, it was used for all of your rigging on ships. It made your canvas sails, okay? And the hemp.
And the rope?
And the rope, that's part of your rigging. Yeah, 90% of the rigging on your ships was made out of hemp. And a lot of it still is today. Hemp would survive this hard seas crossing the ocean from Europe to the United States, where cotton would not. And, of course, they put synthetics in, but they don't have the same values as hemp does either, even today.
Jim Politis, we're going to have to put a picture of you on our Facebook page after this broadcast ends and show people that you're dressed in what looks like some sharp but very comfortable clothing today. Yeah. You want to tell us about it?
Well, I purchased this about 3 years ago.
Which this? Your shirt or your pants?
Shirt and pants, both. Okay. And they're made of 100% industrial hemp. The very sad part about the whole thing is they're made in China because we can't grow it here. But it's extremely comfortable. It's a very relaxed feeling. You can wear it in the cold and you can wear it in the heat. It breathes very well. And I've washed this shirt probably 30 or 40 times. Every time I went out to make a presentation, I wore my hemp. And it is as good as it was new. There's not a worn spot in it.
Oh, it wears so well. Yeah. I mean, when I was in college, I sold, it's a brand called Artisan Gear, and they made hemp products. And I sold bags and checkbook covers, and because I was all into it, you know. And I my mom still has stuff that she got from me, and that was, you know, back in the early 90s when I went to UGA. And
University of Georgia.
University of Georgia, yes. Go Bulldogs. But her bags she still has, and they look like they did. I mean, and she uses them, you know.
Our guest today on Virginia Insight, Jim Politis from Montgomery County, Virginia, a member of the Virginia Industrial Hemp Coalition. Jason Amatucci, who lives in Nelson County, Virginia, is the founder of that coalition. So Jason had a challenge that he offered a few minutes ago. Anybody who thinks they have a good reason for why hemp should stay illegal in Virginia. We'd love to hear from you at 888-967-2825, or if you prefer the memory tool for the phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK. Of course, we also want to hear from you if you have questions about anything that you've heard or comments. And in addition to calling us by phone, you can reach us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. I so rudely interrupted there. Do you remember what you were going to say, Jason?
Oh, no, I was just saying how the products, the hemp lasts for, you know, a long, long time, and it just wears. Like we have T-shirts, when you wash them, they just get softer and softer, and they just last so much longer mm-hmm. than cotton. I mean, when you compare hemp to all these products it stands against, it beats them hands down. I mean, every time. It really does.
So what do you hear from lawmakers when you're making your pitch about why they're resistant to changing the status of hemp?
I tell you what I hear a lot of. Oh, I don't know much about this, or, you know, and I know that's a line, because people have been lobbying them for years. They know what's going on here. A lot of these lawmakers, I called into your show, you know, Senator Mark Warner dodged it, and he laughed about it. But, you know, it's not a laughing matter. This is serious. This is something that
So what do you think's going on? Why do you think that they're dodging?
Status quo, I guess, you know, that's kind of like what we have in politics these days. Keep the status quo. I mean,
Is there some force, some economic force?
This would compete with a lot of different things. Okay, 50%
of the world's cotton industry might not want hemp to be legalized.
All pesticide. The industries are against it.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Pesticide industry.
All the industries are against it.
Why
much.
Would the pesticide be opposed
you
to
it? You don't need it to grow hemp. How much do we use when we grow cotton?
Monsanto would be out of the loop with their fertilization. If we switch to a hemp-based economy, a lot of stuff would not be the same. I mean, a lot of these businesses.
I'm curious, is that too strong a term that you just used? A hemp-based economy? Explain that to me.
Well, this plant can do all these things. I mean, we can replace,
renewable.
Look, 4 times the amount of fiber yield per acre than timber. Okay, so why are we cutting down trees? We could be growing hemp for our paper, okay? So that takes care of that. Let's take about the cotton. We can replace the cotton industry. The biodiesel, I mean, it really is. I say a miracle plant. It really is. I mean, it was put on the earth here for us to use. We have been using it, and it's absolutely ridiculous that we have people with penalties of jail and fines and all these things for growing a resource that great. I mean, I'm very passionate about this. It needs to change, and it will change. It's going to change. The tide has already turned, and it's going to happen. And we're going to look back on this time and say, what side on history were you on? Were you one of these prohibitionists? And looking back, I mean, we look at the alcohol prohibition, and we know how ridiculous that was, and the people that were breaking, you know, that's throwing the liquor out and throwing the beer out and stuff, and saying, you know, why are people, you know, it's going to be the same way. We're going to look back on these times and say, what were people thinking here? Restricting this plant that was so valuable. So many environmental. If you're in the environmental side of this, this should be your issue. You could do so much good replacing this stuff with hemp.
And one of the things with the industrial hemp is it is not industrial hemp that they are attacking per se, as much as it is cannabis. When the laws were written.
And as was pointed out a little bit earlier, the two of you say that's something completely different. We actually have somebody who specializes in plant physiology and ecology, a professor of both biology and environmental science, who has some perspective on this issue, and he's going to be with us in just a couple of minutes. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Still here in studio with me, industrial hemp legalization advocates Jim Politis and Jason Amatucci. Now joining us by phone is a plant physiologist who has joint appointments as a professor in both the Department of Biology and the Department of Environmental Sciences at the University of Virginia. Manuel Lerdau, thank you for making time for us, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I'm very pleased.
So this idea of making it once again legal to grow and produce industrial hemp in Virginia, you think is a good idea?
Oh, I think it's an excellent idea.
How come?
And, well, for one thing, Virginia has an ideal climate and soils for hemp. For a second thing, we have a great opportunity from an agricultural perspective, looking at, particularly in central and southside Virginia, areas that once were vibrant agricultural sectors with tobacco, and now that crop is basically gone from the state. And we really have, in a sense, from an ecological sense, an open niche for a crop like hemp to contribute economically to the state and to help us maintain our agricultural way of life. And as a scientist, I'm very excited because I think hemp has a lot of opportunities for really neat physiological and genetic research.
Yeah. We were going to talk about how the farm bill that was just passed really opens the door for you. And I'm really...
This is the national farm bill. The federal.
This is at the federal level. It was a long time, you know, a lot of back and forth with other bipartisan stuff. But there's a amendment in it that talks about how universities and state agriculture commissions can now legally, President Obama signed it on February 7th, and that opened the door now where we can grow hemp as long as the states will allow it.
And the states have to pass bills
right
in order to do that. Virginia is not one of them.
Nope.
There are 10, Kentucky, West Virginia, Colorado, Washington, Hawaii, and several others. I can't name them all off the top of my head.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed you got that
but,
far.
31 states have introduced legislation.
Right, 31 have. We have passed resolutions in 1999
right
and 2001 supporting this, though we've never been able to make a law. Our goal this year is to get a law passed so that you at UVA and our friends at Virginia Tech and maybe VSU can take advantage of this product and do some real research on what can be done with all the new technologies today with a plant that's been around for over 12,000 years.
Manuel Lerdau, you're a full professor at a major university in two departments. And it's my understanding that you first got interested in industrial hemp in high school. I have no idea what your age is, sir, but I've got to guess that that was at least a few years ago, considering where you've progressed in your profession so far.
I think a few decades ago is more accurate.
So how did you get interested in this in high school?
So I, as a high school student, led wilderness backpacking and camping trips for kids from Washington, D.C. And on one of these trips in Western Virginia, during a lunch break, I went for a little walk on the shore, and I found an enormous field of hemp, several acres worth of hemp. Very strange to me. I was kind of a science nerd at the time, and I knew what I was looking at. And so I went back, and I started talking and reading and calling up and asking questions. And it turned out that through World War II, the U.S. Navy actually subsidized farmers to grow hemp for rope. Mm-hmm. And during the war, we lost a lot of our access to Manila, which was the main source of rope. That was a tropical plant. And so the U.S. Navy was hiring farmers to grow hemp for fiber, just what we're trying to do now. The Navy was doing then for one particular purpose, growing rope to help with ships. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. We have this crop that once was widespread in Virginia and now is gone.
How and why did it become illegal?
Well, you know, this is where I say I'm a biologist, not a politician.
Well, I'm the politician, if you'd like me to help.
Yeah, there's a long answer to that, long and short answer.
If there's someone who will admit to being a politician, he's welcome to it. Go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Lerdau. Great to have you on the air. We communicated a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, I
asked you to help us get this started. But one of the things that happened back in the late 1930s was an item called the Marijuana Tax Act. And what that did was make cannabis, a whole category of product, illegal to grow in the United States. Stories are said, and I feel pretty comfortable with them being partially true, that a lot of big industry decided that this would be a threat to their progression if we allowed industrial.
The Popular Mechanics article.
Popular Mechanics article 1938.
Yeah.
Says the first $1 billion crop.
Yeah. And they knew
so
the writing on the wall.
So I understand that there's lots of controversy about why and how marijuana / cannabis became illegal in the 1930s. But are you saying that it was at the same time that industrial hemp, the cousin, I guess we could call it, to cannabis, that industrial hemp became illegal at the same time, or it was later?
It was the same time because it was all categorized as a class one drug.
And you think that there were economic forces that pushed for that to happen?
I feel
because
certainly.
They didn't want the competition,
right?
Yes,
from hemp.
Yes, they did a campaign, and you know, you look at these Reefer Madness videos, people jumping out windows, smoking on a cigarette of marijuana cigarette. It's ridiculous. And they just preyed on fear to the public. And then the Randolph Hearst had the newspapers, and that was
DuPont.
DuPont. I mean, they all got together, and it's still going on today. And we pretty much people understand that this is the way politics work.
Dr. Lerdau, as a professor of biology and a professor of environmental science, and somebody who has been actively supporting the legalization of industrial hemp for quite some time now, I imagine that you occasionally run into colleagues in academia that, when you talk about this, kind of roll their eyes a little bit.
Well, I think there are two issues at play here. One is one that's fairly easily dispensed with, and that's this confusion between industrial hemp and marijuana. Those are two different subspecies of the same plant, of the plant Cannabis sativa. But saying that they are different subspecies and are as different from one another as one could almost imagine. The leaves are a similar shape, but in terms of their chemistry, in terms of their physical properties, they really have very little relation to one another. And in fact, from the perspective of drug control, if that's one of your goals, industrial hemp has great potential. Because not so much of an issue in Virginia, where there's not a lot of outdoor marijuana illegal growth going on, but in other states where the climate is better for growing marijuana outdoors, it has different climatic requirements than industrial hemp. Industrial hemp can actually interbreed with marijuana and, in effect, breed out some of the traits of marijuana that drug producers want to have.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, there should be a lot of support for industrial hemp production precisely from the people who don't want to see marijuana.
Right.
Good and point. And if you look, you can even compare what the two plants look like when they grow. Industrial hemp gets quite tall, very large, robust plant, and the marijuana version is a very small, kind of rounded thing. And you can see how one has the dominant traits. And industrial hemp, it's designed to be a big, tough plant that produces lots of wonderful fiber. The oil is potentially very useful as well. Very full of protein, actually a complementary set of proteins with essential amino acids. It really has great potential along a variety of avenues that have nothing to do with drug production. And one of the most important things I think we need to do is dispense with the conversation about marijuana.
Well,
when
plant
we're
physiologist
talking about industrial hemp.
Manuel Lerdau, I think I heard you say that there were two issues here. So one is the one that you have just addressed about the confusion between cannabis and industrial hemp. What's the other one?
Mm-hmm. Well, the other one is I think we have tended to focus in the past, as I said, when we last had industrial hemp as a crop product in the U.S., it was really with the focus on rope because we couldn't get access to Manila, which is another plant source for fiber. Now, with the current industrial hemp, we have a real opportunity, which is that in the last 30 or 40 years, there have been spectacular advances in our understanding of plant breeding, plant genetics, plant physiology. And we have not brought those to bear on industrial hemp. We are really at the cusp of exploration on this crop. And that's where you can make the biggest advances.
Mm-hmm. One of the analogies I like to make when we're talking about species of industrial hemp, as you say there are many, is all canines are one species. You have a Chihuahua and a Great Dane. That Chihuahua is going to bite you. Okay? It's the same analogy from industrial hemp to the marijuana plant. Okay? So
and
when you categorize things, you know, all species have many, many directions.
Well, it's kind of like this. I mean, we have similar things that look alike, right? Well, powdered sugar and baking soda looks like cocaine. So let's by that logic, we need to ban anything that looks like, you know, a drug that we want to get rid of in the, you know, streets. I mean, seriously. I mean,
to continue on Jim Politis's example here, which I think is a good analogy, where we are with industrial hemp is in a sense at the dawn of the domesticated dog. When dogs were first domesticated, we had no idea that we could develop so many different breeds that were capable of helping humanity mm-hmm. in so many ways. And with industrial hemp, we haven't even begun to try to breed them using all the modern science and technology that we have. And to me, as a scientist, that is an incredible opportunity.
Well, I wanted to also
add...
That's
one of the really neat things in the Farm Bill is that we can bring together physiologists and geneticists, agricultural scientists, and farmers mm-hmm. working together to essentially be on the very steep part of the learning curve and on the profit curve.
Well, we've only got you
industrial hemp.
We've only got you with us for a couple more minutes, Manuel Lerdau. So let me remind people listening, particularly if they have a question for you, that we would need you to call in on our talk show line at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825, or post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Somebody's getting a call right now, but I think that's your cell phone, so if you could turn off your cell phone, that would be terrific. Dr. Lerdau, earlier, I think the figure that Jim Politis used was 25,000 different products that can be made from this crop. Can you name a few of those that you think are most important or most worth considering?
Well, I think the ones that probably in the short term have the greatest potential are ones to do with fiber and fabric production, because hemp has, particularly a few of the varieties of industrial hemp, look like they will have great potential. And, I mean, they've been shown on small scales, but even have potential on much larger scales to have great potential in fabric production. And secondly, the fact, as I mentioned before, that hemp is one of the few plant products that contains the full range of essential amino acids. So humans are able to produce and synthesize all of the amino acids that we need to make protein, except for 9 of them. And very few plants produce all 9 of those. Hemp is one of those few plants. So I think there's a lot of potential for hemp as a nutritional product. And we have to explore that. We really have not we've not pushed that very far yet. There are products out there. You can certainly buy it, but it's not something that we've developed. I think there's a lot of room there. So those are probably the two in the short term that I think have the greatest potential for us.
I wanted to add in there, hemp oil says here that it's the richest known source of the polyunsaturated essential fatty acids, which are the good fats. And it said it's very high in the essential amino acids, including the GAMO, the GLA, which is also found in mother's milk. So, I mean, this is a superfood, you know, basically. And like you say, with studying, we can just, you know, start to breed more and, you know, better seed oils. And we can figure this out through the help of you guys. You know, I think it's great that we have this opportunity now. We just need to get Virginia on board, which is where we come in.
Right.
We're going to lose you, our connection to you, in just a few moments here, Dr. Lerdau. But some people who want industrial hemp legalized, it seems to me, make a big argument about it supporting energy independence because it can be used for fuel. Mm-hmm. In your view, is that realistic at all?
I have to admit, I am not as persuaded of the biofuel evidence as some of my colleagues are. I think that when we look at the numbers involved, I've not yet seen evidence that hemp is going to really be that valuable when it comes to biofuel production.
Manuel Lerdau, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we are about to go into a break. Dr. Lerdau is a professor both of biology and of environmental sciences at the University of Virginia. Thank you so much for making time for us, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me. Take care.
We're going to talk to a member of the Virginia General Assembly, a state lawmaker who has some perspective on this, when we get back. So Zeke in Farber has been hanging on patiently for the longest time. And Zeke, I just wanted to let you know that we're going to get to your call really soon, but we do have some other open lines, and I need to let people know that the call-in number for the talk show is easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK. If you prefer that in all numbers, it's 888-967-2825. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham, still here in studio with me, industrial hemp legalization advocates Jim Politis and Jason Amatucci. And before we get to Zeke, we also have now on the phone line with us a Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates who represents the 12th District in the southwest part of the state. Joseph Yost, thank you for making time for us.
Absolutely, thank you.
So can we hear what Zeke's question or comment is? Zeke, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to round out the historical profile of the versatility of hemp a little more fully. In colonial times, in this country, of course, all the ships were powered by sail. And hemp was firstly and most valuable used for the sails because of its durability and the serviceability and longevity. And that when the sails became sufficiently worn, they were recycled into very high quality clothing, conventional clothing for people in colonial times. Then when the clothing was worn out and no longer served that purpose, then it was taken to the rope factory and turned into the finest quality rope. And then, when the ropes had done yeoman duty, as they said, many years later, it was finally taken to the paper mill and turned into paper, the finest of which as was always recognized and used in the printing of our Bibles, starting from the 1640s and on. In fact, if anybody in Virginia has a very old Bible in their family, that may be printed on hempen paper, for known for its quality and durability. A thousand times superior to paper pulp.
Hold on for a second for me, because you've got such a wonderful take on history that we may have questions for you.
Okay.
But as long as you've brought all this up, and we've got Delegate Joseph Yost on the phone, Delegate Yost, we need to ask you, why is this crop illegal to grow in Virginia?
It's not necessarily it's illegal in Virginia. It's illegal, nationwide, and it goes back to, federal law that was put into place several decades ago that lumped industrial hemp into the same category as marijuana. And, you know, until you're able to take that out of the federal policy, you know, unfortunately, that seems to be one of the main inhibitors of really firing back up industrial hemp production in the country and in Virginia.
Joseph, with the new Farm Bill Act, do you think we'll be able to get legislation started this year so that we can start using it in our universities in the next session?
Well, let me just do a little backup here for anybody who's just joined us. Is the two of you here in studio explained a little earlier in the show, based on a portion of the new Farm Bill, which was signed into law early in February, that there are ways in which, on a state-by-state basis, industrial hemp is now legal to grow, but an individual state has to pass legislation to allow it.
Right. Right.
So what you're asking is, in addition to those, 10 or so states that have already moved in that direction, whether Delegate Yost thinks Virginia might do that.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely something, you know, it's something I'm definitely interested in and something that I'm hoping to get my colleagues on board and looking at as we move towards the 2015 session next January. You know, you're absolutely right. In the 2014 Farm Bill, it did allow institutions of higher education, state departments of agriculture to grow or cultivate industrial hemp. And, you know, particularly for the research institutions of Virginia, both Virginia Tech and Virginia State University, you know, hemp has, you know, untold uses. You know, I think the last that I read somewhere was at least 25,000 or more different products that can be used for hemp.
So, Delegate Yost, it sounds like you'd like to see your colleagues move toward allowing it to be grown in the fashion now allowed by federal law to be grown in Virginia. What's it going to take for that to happen?
Yeah, I think it's going to take, you know, bringing some specific groups on board. And earlier conversations that I've had with agriculture coalitions and whatnot, they are definitely interested. But I think we're going to have some education around law enforcement, our Commonwealth attorneys, and some other public safety groups to ensure that they understand, you know, this is not a backdoor way of legalizing marijuana, or and just to understand the differences between industrial hemp and marijuana itself.
Our call-in historian from Faber, Zeke, do you have anything you want to add here before we let you go?
Yes, just one thing briefly. So when you recognize that each of the product, each of the four products that I talked about, the primary one being sailcloth, and then the three derivative recycled products, were all recognized as being the highest quality of their kind, and the additional versatilities that have been cited by your panelists for unknown possible uses at this point. I mean, it's just a compelling argument to go forth with some growing of industrial hemp.
Mm-hmm. Zeke, thank you so much for your call. Delegate Joseph Yost, Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates from the southwestern part of the state, thank you so very much, sir, for making time for us.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, still here in studio, well, let's see. We have Jim Politis, a member of the Virginia Industrial Hemp Coalition and former longtime member of the Montgomery County, Virginia Board of Supervisors, one of our guests. Jason Amatucci, a longtime business person in the greater Charlottesville area and the founder of the Virginia Industrial Hemp Coalition. Anything that needs to be added to what we were just hearing from Zeke or from Delegate Yost?
Yeah, I was going to say, I wanted to add, you know, to just keep people up to date on, you know, when we were lobbying down there in the state capitol, I got a lot of, basically, I didn't get any kind of negative feedback. I didn't get anybody, you know, basically a lot of people want to know more. They're very interested in this idea. I mean, you look at all the states around us, West Virginia has legalized it. I mean, all these states around us, Kentucky, of course, is growing it. I mean, we're getting left behind. And, you know, our delegates see that. Our delegates read the news and they see all these states, Vermont, and all these people that are doing this. So everyone else is doing it. And, you know, they've done the studies. Kentucky's done all kinds of studies. We have a lot of evidence, you know, behind us. And I think that one of our goals here with the coalition is we're going to try to get a poll this year, a non-biased poll to get the opinion of the people, because I think that the politicians need to see the people are behind this And I think they're kind of scared of this issue. They think it might, you know, because of, you know, marijuana, I think, you know. But I think that most people are going to be behind this, and once, and most delegates are going to be behind this too. It's going to have broad support.
Yeah, and I believe that with the work I've been over the last 5 years educating boards of supervisors and economic development,
yeah, you've been
partnerships
making the
and
circuits.
Things of this nature all over the state. The last 2 years, we have an association in Virginia called the Virginia Association of Counties, and they are a big lobbying effort for all of our counties in the state. And 2 years ago, I introduced a legislative priority to allow or to support the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. And it passed 84 out of 85 counties that were present at the meeting. Then last year, I reintroduced it again, and every member of VACO supported that bill.
And the Farm Bureau
and
is
the
behind
Farm
it.
Bureau,
they made a statement this
statewide
year.
And recently
American
in
Farm
January,
Bureau.
Nationally, mm-hmm. has supported the growth. And, you know, it's almost a no-brainer to me that we should be able to do this. There's plenty of support. It's a stronger agricultural area support maybe than a urban area support, but it fits across every spectrum of the economy.
We're going next to Churchville. Philip, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Jim Politis and or Jason Amatucci, please.
Well, for all persons on the panel right now, I've read in certain literatures mentioning of hemp plastics
mm-hmm.
from this product, and consider the impact of all plastics in our culture. It's tremendous. And what if this would simply, gently, displace that and help us clean up our boo-boo?
That's a great point.
Yes.
That's a great point. Eco-friendly hemp can replace most toxic petrochemical products. Research is being done.
So you're saying somehow the plastics made from hemp are
correct.
More...
Oh, yeah, they biodegrade.
Eco-friendly?
They biodegrade. 50% of oil, a lot of people don't know this, 50% of oil is used to make plastics. So, you know, if hemp starts growing and we start replacing this, oil doesn't like that, you know. But, you know, plant-based cellophane, recycled plastic mixed with hemp for injected molded products, resins made from the oil. 2 million cars today right now have hemp composite parts instead of plastic for their door panels, dashboards, luggage racks. Henry Ford made his Ford, and there's
a
video
hemp,
on it.
He made a hemp car in 1941.
I mean, this is not this is nothing
he
new.
Made, Henry Ford made a car out of hemp
in
yeah.
1941.
Well, with it's a resin, like, you know, they made it like a plastic, and he took a hammer to it. There's a video of it. I need to probably post it on our Facebook page, he hit a hammer, and it doesn't shatter, doesn't do anything, doesn't even make a dent.
And the statement at the end of the video is 10 times stronger than steel.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all these companies, what you name them, all the car companies that are starting.
Well, Ford, Volvo,
BMW,
GM, BMW,
Chevy.
They made an entire car in
Lotus has a car.
Lotus.
Entire car made out of hemp.
Made out
but
of hemp.
What you're saying is that most cars on the road today have some components
some
that
components
are made
of hemp.
From
2 million
hemp,
cars
two
today
million
right now. So the market's already there. It just needs
but
to grow.
Those components are based on hemp that was grown in China.
Other
or
countries. We're not getting a piece of that at all in America. We're losing out big time.
Philip, thank you so very much for your call. Charlottesville area-based businessman and landscape specialist Jason Amatucci is one of our in-studio guests. He is the founder of the Virginia Industrial Hemp Coalition. Sitting next to him, former longtime member of the Montgomery County, Virginia Board of Supervisors and retired buffalo rancher Jim Politis. I'm Tom Graham. We got just a couple minutes left, gentlemen. What haven't we touched on yet that you want people to know about this issue? Jim?
I think we've been talking a lot about the being illegal today, and we have some laws that are changing. But the most important thing we need to do today is to continue to support the Industrial Hemp Farming Act, which are two standalone bills, one in the House, which is H.R. 525, and one in the Senate, which is S.359. H.R. 525 has 49 co-sponsors, very bipartisan. It was introduced by Congressman Massey out of Kentucky. It was originally a bill that was introduced by Ron Paul in 2006, and he had continued it until this past year when he retired. And now Rand Paul is a co-sponsor on the Senate bill, which was introduced by Oregon Senator Ron Wyden.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is different than what we were talking about earlier about the portion of the new farm bill that allows hemp grown under university auspices.
The difference is what this bill does, it takes the cannabis product, industrial hemp, and separates it from the Controlled Substance Act and allows states to bring in their own regulations to grow it. So then it will go directly to the farmer, and then from there it grows. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to go through the university. It isn't a bad thing to have universities work on it because they're going to be able to do research.
Yeah, they're going to improve it.
To improve it. My opinion is don't try to reinvent the wheel. Let's just make it better. The wheel used to be square. They started taking corners off it. Now it's round, you know. And that's the same thing we need to do with hemp.
And I definitely wanted to definitely plug our website. It's vahemp.org. Very easy. And we have a thing you can click on there. It says take action. Okay, this is what we need to do. This is what we're all about. We need to get grassroots people to, you know, put pressure on your delegates and your senators and your governor. We have a link there to email the governor. Please email him and ask him to support industrial hemp. And you can have a link there to find your legislator. You can find your legislator and email them, call them, please. That's how we're going to get this done.
Our guests have been retired rancher and former longtime member of the Montgomery County, Virginia Board of Supervisors, Jim Politis, as well as the founder of the Virginia Industrial Hemp Coalition, Jason Amatucci. As well as earlier in the hour, University of Virginia ecologist Manuel Lerdau, plus Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Joseph Yost. Gentlemen, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you
very much for having us.
You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. And when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about our guests and the work they are doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.